Good day, this is Kess with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Tuesday, March 21st. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, City Council Delays Library Employee Contract Decision. Decatur. The motivations of the Decatur City Council were called into question Monday during a discussion about the length of a proposed agreement with union-represented Decatur Public Library employees. Council members asked for more information about the contract, given its unusual length of nearly 10 years, before they would consider its approval. Library Board President John Phillips, who is running against Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe in the April 4 election, said the length of the contract was his idea. Phillips questioned whether the council members were having issues with the contract because of him. "It's 100% my doing," Phillips said. "I defy you to show that this isn't under any and all circumstances a great deal. This is absolutely a fair deal." The council voted 6-0 in favor of delaying a decision on the issue, with Councilman Bill Faber absent. Faber has openly endorsed Phillips for mayor, while the other council members have been more supportive of Moore Wolfe. She said the council members had just received details of the contract last week after library officials and union representatives had approved support for it. "We don't get involved until the end," Moore Wolfe said. "We need additional information. We want to take the time to get our questions answered." The current contract for more than 20 employees represented by the American Federation for State, County, and Municipal Employees isn't set to expire until April 30th. Library employees were eligible for incentives by coming to an agreement before March 1st, City Librarian Rick Meyer said. "The two sides were able to reach an agreement relatively easily," Meyer said. "There wasn't a tense moment with it," Meyer said. "They had very few issues with it." Meyer said a 10-year labor contract is outside of the box thinking that other libraries don't have in place. The current agreement was for 5 years, while prior contracts were for 3 years. Council members expressed concern that a 10-year contract leads to too much unpredictability. "It seems like it's extraordinarily long," Councilman Chris Funk said. "There is so much uncertainty in a very dynamic business." Council members Pat McDaniel and Lisa Gregory expressed similar hesitations about not knowing what the situation will be like for the city and the library in a decade. "The library pays the individual premiums for its employees, which Councilman Jerry Dawson said is a concern, given rising health care costs." "That's a nice perk," Dawson said. "No one knows what the costs will be." Meyer said the library would save about $40,000 over the course of the contract, or about $4,000 a year, if it didn't offer to pay individual premiums. He said the length of the contract would eliminate the need for additional negotiations every few years, which leads to a cost for the library of between $10,000 and $50,000 by paying attorney fees. Under the proposed terms of the agreement, Meyer said employees would receive an average of 1.5% pay increase per year. Councilwoman Dana Ray said other businesses don't guarantee employees pay raises. "Some years it stays the same," Ray said. "I don't feel comfortable with that." Ray said the council hasn't been involved with the negotiating process, as its concerns would have been raised during closed executive session, as would typically happen in such circumstances. "That did not happen," Ray said. "We would voice our concerns prior to it becoming so public. We would know what's going on." Meyer said city staff have been informed about what was being discussed. "We felt like the city was involved every step of the way," Meyer said. "Among the changes to contract is how sick time is accrued, Meyer said. Previously, employees were given 8 hours of sick time each month, which they could accumulate up to 1,900 hours if unused and applied toward retirement benefits, he said. "The proposed change would mean they are automatically given 40 hours of sick time per year," Meyer said. In recent years, he said the number of library employees has been reduced, but sick time is often used. "People showing up is important," Meyer said. "We want folks at work more." Phillips had earlier in the meeting raised questions about the city's handling of the situation when U-Haul expressed interest last year in establishing a store in and developing the vacant Northgate Mall shopping center. He said the company had been made to feel unwelcome there, but Phillips said the city should be interested in pursuing such a development with an interested developer. Phillips said U-Haul has established stores in other cities, including Peoria, Bloomington, and Champaign. Moore Wolf said, "The city made the right decision at the time, a decision she continues to stand behind." She said, "U-Haul wasn't the right fit for the space, both because of how it was zoned and because the city is interested in finding a use for the location that would generate more traffic and sales tax revenue." Moore Wolf said she would be willing to listen if a new proposal were made that would boost economic development efforts and attract more retail options to the city. Brew Works celebrates over year of fun, Suds and Decatur. For a century, Decatur has been like a desert for those who wanted a taste of locally brewed beer. Since there were bars that served craft beers and several local homebrewers who made some suds for family and friends, but not a locally made beer easily accessible to the general population. It was there that Drew Lewandowski, co-founder of Decatur Brew Works, saw a need. "Decatur was long overdue for this," Lewandowski said. "It was kind of like putting a waterhole in the middle of a desert, in a way." Tucked in a small 3,000-square-foot building on the corner of Main and Main, Decatur Brew Works has become a unique spot that has served not only locally brewed beer, but also a unique sense of community that has helped it stand out for more than just being the first brewery to open in the city in a century. With its 24 beers on tap, a mix between local brews and those from other craft breweries, an emphasis on bring-your-own-food, the brewery has earned just as much a staple of downtown Decatur as Central Park. Not too shabby for an idea that began years ago as a conversation between a couple of homebrewers. The first drop of the Decatur Brew Works story can be traced back a few years when Lewandowski and Michael Cole met through the local homebrew club. Cole later came to work for Lewandowski at Macon Resources Incorporated, or MRI, where the latter has been the longtime executive director. While there, Cole pitched a business plan for a brewery as an expansion opportunity for MRI. While supportive, the MRI board of directors passed due hesitation of the agency entering the brewing industry. But from the pitch came a partnership between Cole and Lewandowski, as well as Stan Rives and Renee Mannering, who came together to determine whether Decatur was ready for a brewery. After a year of preparation, which saw them remodel the space, obtain permits, and even launch a Kickstarter campaign that raised nearly $13,000, the brewery was finally ready to open its doors January 26, 2016. Even as the grand opening approached, there was a curiosity on whether the project would succeed in Decatur. Aside from being the first brewery in the area, Cole talked about the industrial nature of Decatur, with blue-collar workers who stereotypically prefer beer staples such as Budweiser or Miller over the more expensive craft beer. Within the first few weeks, when people regularly lined up outside for the brewery to open and a seat inside became one of the hottest tickets in town, those concerns about whether Decatur Brew Works would survive were put to rest. "My favorite thing is to see guys who come in and say, 'I only drink Bud Light. What have you got here for me?'" Cole said, "and then they come in the next week and drink new stuff again and again. I couldn't say enough about how great Decatur has been in supporting us." The variety of beer styles has especially helped the brewery stand out from other bars in the area. With many styles usually seen done by large brewers, those styles can vary from a blueberry beer that shares a name that celebrates Milliken University to a Belgian style that can tickle one's taste buds with its various flavors. When the doors are closed on Sunday, you can usually find Lewandowski and Cole in the basement of the building where the brewing system is set up. The two, with about 25 years of homebrewing experience, come up with a number of beers to complement the regular house styles on tap, such as the popular Commodore India Pale Ale and D-Town Brown. It is more than just the beer that has made Decatur Brew Works such a destination spot. The brewery has made a name for itself by hosting one of the only regular trivia nights in the area, taking place every other Tuesday night and covering everything from general knowledge to entire nights dedicated to topics such as Game of Thrones or Saved by the Bell. Other unique events have featured monthly yoga sessions and a ukulele night. The events get down to what Lewandowski said was one of the goals of the business: to foster a culture where regulars and newcomers could bond over good beer. That bond is a big reason why Brian Bell continues to return to the brewery long after earning the title of the Brew Works' first customer. Bell, 38, waited more than an hour outside in the cold to earn that recognition, coming to the grand opening to help support locally made beer. His return visits were about more than just the drinks, though. As Bell said, the brewery became something like a neighborhood bar. He's since become something more than just a patron, as he has regularly hosted the trivia nights and written the questions himself. It's exciting. It's a relaxing environment where people know each other and can just chat, he said. The events also help boost traffic on what Cold calls normally slow business days. A recent trivia night dedicated to Gilmore Girls saw the taproom filled to capacity, not normally seen on weekdays. The space is one thing that is brought up, as about 75 patrons can be in the bar at once. That fact can make it especially chaotic on weekends or other big events. It's part of what Lewandowski said have been early conversations about which direction to take the brewery. What those may entail to be seen, as he and Cole declined to get into specific future plans or the financials of the business, they say only that it has been a fulfilling venture. While the idea of a large-scale brewing process that includes bottling or canning of their beer for wide consumption is a dream of any brewer, Lewandowski said the plan is now to continue what has made Brewworks such a hit in the community. To go too much too fast is not really a good business plan, he said. We were modest in our approach, and I think that's why we've been so successful. Perishing staff learns about social service agencies to aid families. Decatur. Mid-morning, the costs at the Salvation Army are stripped, the tables in the dining area are cleaned off, and the place is quiet and spick and span. Men leave at 8 a.m., said Jeff Mueller, program director, some for work, some for mental health or substance abuse treatment. Those men do the cleaning and the cooking, too. Staff from the Perishing Early Learning Center, which includes programs at Baum and Southeast as well, spent their professional learning community day visiting social service agencies in the community. The idea was to help them better understand what each agency offers so they're better able to assist families who need help. As our pre-K program expands and the number of families we're serving expands, we are increasing our parent educator department as well, said Megan Grigorich, early childhood program coordinator. We have a lot of new faces and haven't really had a chance recently to get out and have some face-to-face meetings with these agencies and really see what kind of depth of services they provide. I think it will help increase the knowledge and experience and ability to get the right resources with our families. The staff also visited Dove Incorporated, Crossing Healthcare, Northeast Community Fund, New Life Pregnancy Center, Decatur Housing Authority, and Macon County Health Department. Pershing principal Sarah Knuppel said 348 students come from low-income households. 31 are bilingual, and 178 have individualized education programs for special education services ranging from speech or developmental delays, cognitive impairments, occupation or physical therapy, or social service needs. The program serves 588 children in all. One parent educator in the Pershing group, Heather Smith, was able to catch up with a former client when the group toured the men's shelter. Mueller told the group that he was formerly homeless and addicted to drugs and described his life as animalistic until he got into rehab at Heritage Behavioral Health Center, where Smith was his caseworker. Once he was free of drugs, he was able to rebuild his life and eventually become the program director at the Salvation Army's shelter. The goal, he said, is to get the men employed back into the community and reunited with their families. Once they have an income, they hand over 65% of it to the Salvation Army to be kept for them until they are ready to strike out on their own, so they have savings. The organization offers training in culinary arts and forklift driving to help with job skills and a book club, Bible study, and other social activities. You always hear that one person can't make a difference, Mueller said, but we see it every day. Groups often ask to tour the facility and learn what the Salvation Army does, he said. And he's always happy to accommodate, but when he got a call from Holy Family School, his first thought was that kids don't have checkbooks. Like any organization dependent on donations, the Salvation Army always needs financial help. However, the children were there, they were motivated to make Christmas stockings for the men there, and they called Mueller to come pick up the boxes. There were so many that they wouldn't fit into his vehicle, and he had to call someone to help him. The checkbook can't be seen sometimes, Mueller said, adding as he tapped his chest over his heart, it's right here. Life turns in an Illini moment. Champagne. Imagine waking up last Saturday morning knowing there is a person in town who wants to talk to you about his big idea. You've never spoken to this person. You've certainly never met them. And within a period of a few hours, you've agreed to pack up your wife, your three children, essentially your entire life, and climb aboard a private jet with this virtual stranger who had somehow convinced you to trust him unconditionally. You've said yes to his grand plan that includes moving your family almost 650 miles, a new job, new schools, a new home, a new life. To the average person, a decision that monumental can't be made in the course of a Saturday morning. But to a head college basketball coach, that's exactly how those career-defining moments happen. Brad Underwood, along with his wife Susan and children Tyler, Katie, and Ashley, were introduced Monday at the State Farm Center, 2 days after that flight to a new life. Underwood is the new Illini head men's basketball coach, lured to Champaign by a person Underwood described as a tremendous salesman, and of course, by a 6-year, $18 million contract. That salesman is Josh Whitman, the director of athletics, who in 13 months on the job seems to have dramatically changed the culture and level of expectation within the Illini athletic department. And while such a dramatic change may be impossible for a person to digest, Susan Underwood said it's important to know a coach's family operates in a different world. For some people, it's not normal, she said, but for us who have invested and who have been on the journey, we completely understand and are 100% on board. A lot of people outside don't get us. It's our normal, not their normal. One who understands how Underwood landed in Champaign is his agent and friend, Brett Just, who is based out of Chicago and who represents many other high-profile college basketball coaches. Just's clients list includes Frank Martin, South Carolina, Andy Infield, Southern California, Shaka Smart, Texas, Chris Beard, Texas Tech, Brian Wardell, Bradley, Saul Phillips, Ohio University, and Tim Miles, Nebraska. When an AD wants to gauge a coach's interest, he often works through an agent. So when Whitman wanted to know if Underwood was available after just one season at Oklahoma State, he called Just. Just knew Underwood had lived in Illinois for 10 years, working from 1992 to 2003 as an assistant at Western Illinois University for his friend Jim Kerwin. He knew Underwood had been to something called the Assembly Hall on a few occasions when Lon Kruger and Bill Self were including Western Illinois in their Illini schedules, and he knew Underwood had confided to him that coaching at the University of Illinois would be a dream destination. During their conversations, Just fell in love with Whitman before Underwood had the chance. He could tell his passion for the school was sincere, and although other schools were also calling to gauge Underwood's interest, Illinois was the job Just knew Underwood would want to hear about. Even that wasn't easy. Oklahoma State lost to Michigan 92-91 Friday in an NCAA tournament game, and very little time had passed before Just phoned Underwood to tell him Whitman wanted to meet with him. Just knew his client well enough to know what would happen next. When they finally got together, it was love at first sight, Just said. Whitman had found his coach. Underwood had found his perfect boss. That's what allowed them to fly so easily to Champaign. I need Josh to be my boss, Underwood said, explaining the budding relationship. I need him to be a guy I can lean on and a friend. I value those things, and Brett knew this would be a perfect fit for me. As soon as we sat down, it became evident. On Wednesday, Susan Underwood and her children will fly back to Stillwater, Oklahoma. The girls will finish their sophomore and freshman years of high school. Tyler, a student and basketball player at Oklahoma State, will transfer to Illinois. And before long, they'll be a part of the university community. Susan Underwood is used to the chaos of moving, but she'd welcome a chance to settle down. This time, it just feels like we're going to stay, she said. It really feels like it. State Senator to run for governor. Normal. State Senator Daniel Bliss visited Normal on Monday, announcing that he's running for Illinois governor in 2018. He joins a growing field of Democrats hoping to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Bliss visited the Normal Public Library as a guest of the Illinois State University College Democrats. There is sentiment downstate that Illinois is run by Chicago politics, said Austin Cullinan, a spokesman for the college group. The fact that he is willing to come here for his first campaign stop speaks volumes about what he is trying to accomplish. The former University of Chicago math professor from Evanston said during an announcement streamed live via Facebook Monday morning that it's time to take the state back from special interests that have controlled both parties. Several other Democrats already are vying to take on Rauner. They include businessman Chris Kennedy, Chicago alderman Amaya Power, regional school superintendent Bob Daber, and small business owner Alex Paterkis. Billionaire businessman J.B. Pritzker said last week he's formed a committee to explore a bid and was contributing $200,000 to fund its day-to-day operations. What I like about Dan is that he's a strong, progressive Democrat, and at the same time, he is very rational, Cullinan said. He understands that both Democrats and Republicans have built this mess in Springfield, and we need someone who can rise above the partisan muckraking to come up with viable solutions. Biss used the discussion to call for an end to Illinois' nearly 2-year state budget stalemate, better investment in schools and communities, and a graduated income tax. Biss, who graduated from Harvard University and earned a PhD from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, served one term in the Illinois House before he was elected to Senate in 2012. He was among the harshest critics of Rahner and the other Republicans during the 2016 campaign, creating a federal super PAC, that super PAC, that spent millions on TV ads linking the governor to the then presidential candidate Donald Trump. The Illinois Republican Party criticized Biss's connection to Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, calling him the North Shore branch of the Madigan machine. Spokesman Stephen Yaffa noted Biss supported Madigan for House Speaker and has taken campaign money from a political fund that Madigan controls. A recent poll found Rahner's disapproval rating has almost doubled since he took office. Statewide, 58% of respondents disapprove of Rahner, according to the poll by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. But the poll also found a majority of residents disapprove of Madigan. According to the poll, 61% somewhat or strongly disapprove of Madigan. That's down from 63% last year. Improving outlooks. Personal Touch gives Oasis clients a boost. Decatur. Marie Bragg started out asking for advice about what she should do with her thinning hair. By the time her manicure was done, the Decatur woman had eyes for nothing but her fingernails, each freshly painted, futuristic gold. "Ah, that's so pretty," she exclaimed, admiring each hand in turn. "I enjoyed myself." Bragg, 75, who was among the satisfied customers taking advantage Monday of free manicures offered every couple of weeks at Oasis Day Center for the homeless. Mary Garrison, the chief nail technician and a professor of social work at Millikan University, has been bringing students with her to provide the service since last semester after being introduced to the concept during a visit a year earlier to Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. "You can connect with people quickly because you can just be with someone and not have to direct your eye contact until you get to know each other," Garrison said. "Building relationships is essential to what we do in the helping professions." Leisha McMahon, a senior psychology major from Decatur, was with Garrison Monday and has been her most faithful helper. She said she wanted to learn how to achieve a comfortable level in face-to-face interactions as she hopes to become a couples counselor after completing grad school. "I prefer to do men because I'm not great with doing polish," McMahon said. Indeed, the pair's first takers were male, with Clifford Dozier, a regular customer of Garrison's, and Robert Nelson having his nails done for the very first time by McMahon. "They were dirty and kind of raggedy," Nelson said. "Now they look nice and clean." After Bragg and daughter LaVon Cole sat down, McMahon helped prep Cole's long nails while Garrison did Bragg's manicure. Then Garrison slid over to apply alternating colors of Mod and Incognito to Cole's fingernails. When Bragg expressed concern about the way her nails grow, Garrison suggested she show them to her doctor next time she goes in. When Cole mentioned her father had died, she and Garrison talked about that for a while. "I'm the designated nail lady in my family," Garrison said. "I've done my mom's and sister's nails many times, and I do my own." McMahon said she might be less experienced, but she gets satisfaction in being able to care for other people, even in such a small way. "I'd encourage other people to do little things like this," she said. "It doesn't have to be some grand gesture to help." Mount Zion stresses safety with new stop sign near schools. Mount Zion. Henderson Street near Fletcher Park in the Mount Zion schools will soon require all traffic to stop. The Mount Zion Village Board unanimously approved a plan Monday night that would create a four-way stop at the intersection of Henderson Street and Fletcher Park Boulevard. The stop signs are expected to be installed by June, after the school year ends. Currently, only traffic from the school and on Fletcher Park Boulevard are required to stop. "The plan has been in discussion for more than a year," said Village Administrator Julie Miller, as staff has investigated several accidents that have occurred there. Additionally, she said the number of students from the neighboring junior high and high schools on the west side of Henderson Street who go back and forth between the park and fields on the east side of Henderson makes putting a stop sign there a smart move. "I think it would be a safer place for kids to cross," Miller said. "I just think it would make a much safer intersection to make it a four-way stop." The signs still need to be ordered, which Miller said could take up to 6 weeks to arrive. While all trustees supported the plan, there was some question of whether the signs should be placed before the end of the school year. "If there is a safety concern, we need to address this," said Trustee Ron Johnson. "I think you make it happen right away." The sentiment was understood by Trustee Kevin Fritsch, but he expressed concern that suddenly putting a stop sign there without too much notice could lead to additional accidents with people unknowingly running the new stop signs. The hope, Miller said, is that enough of an awareness campaign can be done to let people know the stop signs will be placed there by summer. In other business, the board approved an intergovernmental agreement with Mount Zion Township to provide limited police patrols in unincorporated areas of the township. The village would provide 10 to 20 hours of police patrol per week at a cost to the township of $55 per hour. Patrols would be conducted in one-hour increments twice a day. Briefs for Tuesday. Clinton. Pedestrian killed. A Clinton man was killed early Monday after being struck by a car near the Casey's General Store at the intersection of Illinois 54 and East Washington Street. The Clinton police and fire departments were notified at 6:40 a.m. and confirmed a man was walking west across the highway when he was hit by a car also traveling west. He was identified as William Towns, 85. The victim was transported to Warner Hospital and Health Services, where he was later pronounced dead. An autopsy is planned. The accident investigation has been turned over to the Illinois State Police District 6 and the DeWitt County Coroner's Office. Springfield, worker pay ruling. The Illinois Supreme Court won't immediately consider Attorney General Lisa Madigan's appeal of a circuit court ruling that state workers must be paid during the state budget impasse. Justices on Monday denied Madigan's request to bypass the appellate court and take the matter directly to the high court. Madigan argues the Illinois Constitution requires an enacted appropriation for state spending. The Democrat says stopping state employee paychecks would hasten a budget agreement. A St. Clair County judge last month refused to reverse a previous order requiring Illinois to pay workers in the absence of a spending plan. Governor Bruce Rauner has accused Madigan of trying to force a government shutdown so that her father, House Speaker Michael Madigan, can raise taxes. Lisa Madigan has denied that claim. Her office already has filed an appeal in Illinois' 5th Appellate District. Decatur. No sentencing. Before the sentencing hearing for Roy L. Armour began Monday, he repeatedly shouted from his seat in the jury box that, "She played my case like a murder case," instead of a theft case, referring to Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton. However, Armour, 37, was not sentenced for his jury conviction on 5 felony counts for battering his 83-year-old grandmother in her residence in October and stealing her TV set. After no witnesses came forth to testify for Armour, he addressed the court in his own behalf. He said he attacked his grandmother because someone slipped ecstasy into his drink. Otherwise, Armour would not have done that because he loved her. Armour said he would kill himself if sent to prison. He was facing a term of 6 to 30 years. He said he has been taking psychiatric medication for depression and PTSD and wanted a psychiatric evaluation so he could be hospitalized instead. Circuit Judge Thomas E. Griffith found that there was doubt as to whether the man was fit to be sentenced. He appointed a psychiatrist to evaluate Armour, who is due back in court on April 28th for status hearing. Decatur, alleged credit theft. A Decatur woman is accused of stealing her cousin's credit and running up a utility bill of more than $2,200 in her name. Sworn police statements say the crime was uncovered when the cousin, who used to live in Decatur but now lives in Alabama, ran a credit check and discovered the outstanding bill on her credit record. When Decatur police told her the name associated with the bill at a Decatur address on East Lincoln Avenue, she recognized it as her cousin. She said the two had briefly been roommates in 2013. Police say the suspect initially denied stealing her cousin's identity, but alleged she later admitted to the offense in a phone call to her relative when she had offered to pay the bill off. She was arrested Friday and booked on a charge of identity theft. Decatur Women's Awards. Sista Girls Rock will be honoring the women in the Decatur community with the Appreciation Awards at 7 p.m. Friday, March 24th in the Decatur Club, 158 West Prairie Avenue. Tickets will be a $30 donation. For more information, call 217-412-1971. Argenta, Old Grade School Breakfast. The Friends of Argenta Breakfast will be 7:30 to 10 a.m. Saturday, March 25th in the Old Grade School at 275 North Kenwood Street. Biscuits, gravy, sausage patties, pancakes, egg casserole, and fruit cups are on the menu. Friends Clothes Closet, a thrift store located in the school, will be open during the breakfast. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, March 21st. Please stay tuned.